Rudy Valley again, stepping perhaps a bit out of character in singing a song from Americana, a song that has taken its audiences by storm, which may be explained by its theme, which is both poignant and different. Brother, can you spare a dime? They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodle dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Buddy, can you spare a dime?
October 29th, 1929 was a bad day. An American economy that had looked like a monolith of prosperity and growth over the previous decade turned out to be a hollow shell. Over the previous 6 months, one by one, elements thought to be pillars of American economic strength had begun to collapse until all that was left was a stock market built on ridiculously and suddenly obviously overpriced stocks. When the sell-off came, it hit like a tidal wave, and billions of dollars thought to be safe in the equity of corporate America suddenly vanished. It was the worst economic downturn in the history of the industrialized world, and would not be turned around until the world united itself against the threat of Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich more than a decade later. There are few people left who remember Black Tuesday, but one need not be a centenarian to understand the consequences of economic collapse. The economy of the late 1970s and early 1980s threatened the livelihood of many Americans, my father included. The economic collapse of 2008 that brought on the Great Recession nearly finished the job the crash of 29 could not. We've all seen it, some of us closer than others. Some of us have felt the collapse fall on top of us and felt the bottom drop out from beneath our feet. In that sort of duress, one takes comfort where it can be found. Some turn to faith. Some turn to alcohol or drugs. Some just keep working, though the feeling of futility is omnipresent. Some use art to express the sorrow, the fear, the grief, the anger, the frustration, and the sense of bewilderment that comes after you do everything you've been told to do, everything you know is right, only to be served with foreclosure papers because the bank is reclaiming your house. The experience has inspired some of the greatest music of the last century, and tonight we're going to hear a few of those songs. Spanning nearly 100 years and at least two continents, we're going to listen to the common refrain of the common coal miners and the farmers and the factory workers and every other walk of life who have suddenly found themselves out of work and without anywhere to turn. My name is Rich Larson. His name is Daniel G. Moyer. This is The Weekly List. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to AM 1080, 95.1 KYMN Radio, 95.1 FM, KYMN Radio in beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. Thank you for joining us once again for another edition of The Weekly List. And I'm going to tell you folks straight up, right up front, this potentially is the most depressing edition of The Weekly List we might ever do.
Well, I wanted to do a PSA with a like warning, label up ahead. Just, you know, kind of one of those public service things. By the way, Rich, 95.1, that doesn't exist on an AM. I think you got to start like in the 100 someplace.
I feel like I need to call out the FM.
No, you do.
But if, you're right. You know, you're right. I didn't have to, but I
you're given more. You're giving more, just like you do.
That's what I do, man. I give and I give and I give and I give, and then I give a little more.
Yeah. Anyhow, Rich is right. You know, I work a corporate job, right? You know, and in my real life,
you're the corporate cog.
Yes, I'm a cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
And so today I was like, I've been listening to these songs on kind of a repeat playlist all day, you know, the past couple of days. And man, I felt like a piece of the machine today and yesterday. So I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
If you're, and here's the thing. There's a lot of people out there that are suffering, that they've had careers end. We're in something right now. The news is calling it the Great Resignation, where people are just leaving. And I think we've gotten into this thing of where people are just fed up.
Yeah,
they're fed up of being on a cog.
It really is. I mean, it really is like 12% of the population just kind of vanished.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was like Karl Marx who always said something that the reason you have the upper class, you get the middle class and the lower class, and every society must have a lower class because that's how the upper class keeps the middle class in line.
Yeah.
I think that was Karl Marx, but I'm not sure.
Well, there's a lot of different... There's a lot of different ways that's been stated.
Yeah,
it applies to racism too. As long as you can convince the lowest white man that he is better than the best black man, then you'll
I've always come from. Everybody should just be all equal. Hey, what's the problem with this? You know, let's treat everybody equal and fair.
Yeah,
you know, I don't care about any of the other junk.
Well, we split up the duties on the weekly list a fair amount. One of my jobs is to figure out what the themes are and then to bring ideas to you and you say, yeah, let's do that. Or you say, no, I don't want to do that or whatever. And it occurred to me that we were, you know, tomorrow is October 29th.
Right.
Which is the crash, the 92nd anniversary of the crash, stock market crash. And I thought, well, that would be pretty interesting because there's a lot of music about hard times and you know, can't find a job and lost my job and, you know, the economy just going to crap. I thought this would be a great, a really interesting show filled with some really interesting music, which, by the way, it is.
Yeah.
But this show hits me on a pretty, what I didn't realize is still a pretty raw nerve.
Well, and that's the thing that I guess I was saying before that, anybody who's lost a job, which
how
is
many
just about job,
how many jobs have I been? I can't even count. I think it's 12 times I've been fired.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm fairly fortunate.
You've had the same job for 25 years. In the time.
Yeah, but now.
In the time you have had the job you have had, I think I have had 14 jobs.
Okay. Well, I'm fairly fortunate. I've had the times where I've spent summers and, you know, you do all kinds of stuff. I remember when I first moved back to Minneapolis, didn't have a job, and I think I probably spent about 5 or 6 months working at Best Buy. And I worked at Best Buy in their video department from 4 o'clock until 11 o'clock every night that. Because that freed up my days to job hunt. And it's hard. It's really hard.
It's hard.
It's difficult. It's depressing. And you lose self-esteem.
The only thing worse than having a job is looking for a job.
No kidding. Well, it's like that one of the songs that we didn't play that I thought about was by the Smiths. Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now. I was looking for a job, then I found a job, and heaven knows I'm miserable now.
Yeah. I have been through this. I didn't live through the Great Depression, obviously, but I bought a house in 2002, sort of based on the idea that I had a job that was a good job and was going to keep getting better, and I was going to start making some more money, and I was going to be able to afford that house in 2002, right? And then I lost that job in 2003, and then I took a job that didn't pay hardly anything at all. I made the mistake of taking the first thing that came along.
Yeah.
And it was a fun job, but that company went belly up, and I was out of a job again. And then I took another job. I wound up selling. I was in sales for a long time, and God, you know what? Let's be honest. I'm a terrible salesman. Everyone tells me I've got the personality for it, and that's fine. Except that I don't like going and telling people that they should buy something that they don't need.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was selling for a small business accounting firm, and was doing okay, actually. Was doing pretty well. Believed in what I was selling, which helped a ton. And then, August of 2008, it was the weirdest thing. People just stopped buying stuff. By the end of the year, I actually got fired from that job on December 31st, 2008, because I hadn't sold anything in 2.5 months. And if you go back and you look at the big picture now and what was going on at that point, this was when the economy was crashing based on the fact that there were all these mortgages that that were, including, by the way, my mortgage was one of those mortgages.
Really?
That was toxic.
Affected a lot of people.
And I lost my job, you know, and that was when I knew I was going to lose my house.
Ow.
Right? And so we struggled along for a while, but you know, eventually you don't make a payment, and then you don't make another payment. Actually, you borrow money from a friend to make a payment, and then you don't make a payment, and then you don't make it. And it's awful. And then one night on a very snowy night, in March of 2010, got a knock on the door. Couldn't understand who the heck would be at my house or knocking on my door at that point, right? Rice County, Minnesota Sheriff handing me foreclosure papers, man.
That's a tremendous feeling.
That's about as hard as it gets right there.
Yeah.
And I got saved from complete and utter economic disaster, which I'm already there anyway, but two things. That was right when Obama had announced a mortgage. I don't remember what they called, but like it was a deal to help people out with the mortgages. And we had applied for the help, and I kind of knew I wasn't going to get it, but I had applied. Right. And, my foreclosure date was 3 months after they had handed me the papers.
Sure.
Right? So it was in June.
So you're like in June.
Right. Well, June comes around, right? And I still haven't heard anything about a sale date or anything like that, a bank sale. And so I called up the bank, and they're like, well, yeah, but you've applied for this program and there are so many applicants that they haven't even
they can't touch
they can't get to you yet, so we've moved the your date out to September. Okay. Well, between June and September, I found somebody to buy my house. And even then, it would have been a short sale, but my God bless my father-in-law loaned me $10,000. And I was able to sell my house, pay off my mortgage. I lost everything, but I didn't go into, you know.
Into complete.
I didn't go into I didn't have a foreclosure. I didn't have, I wasn't bankrupt.
Right.
Right.
Well, and so what have we learned from this? We've learned that sometimes massive red tape bureaucracies do actually work.
I like President Obama very much because of that. Which I think is just a great time then to start talking about Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
Yeah, this was my pick.
Right.
And I mean, as soon as you mentioned the idea that let's do a thing on economic hard times, this was a must song.
Right.
It was originally written in 1932, and it was part of a musical called Americana. There was a hit that came from it by Bing Crosby, and apparently that was the biggest hit of the Great Depression, you know,
yeah,
around the time, which makes sense. The version that we went with was sung by Rudy Valli, and personally, I had to go with Rudy Valli on this one because it just sounded a little bit better. And this was a recording from 1932.
Sure.
And
it's what they call in history a primary resource.
Yes, a primary resource, and that's how we had to start this, right, in my mind.
Yeah.
And you know, it. I think it gets to some real truths, though. It's a different kind of sounding song than what we've normally played.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of heavy guitars or crashing drums. I mean, you know, Tommy Lee from Motley Crue just didn't really swing on that one.
We have never played Tommy Lee on this show.
I'm just saying, man. But you know. Hope that people enjoyed that for the historical point of view on this, because it's, if we're going to talk about something that happened in 1929, I think we should hear an authentic voice of that era.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah,
to start. So that was my reason.
And really, my point for doing this show is that it's not just about 1929.
No.
And the Great Depression, I mean, my God, the Great Depression was, I can't imagine what a lot of those people dealt with in that decade. But we've seen, for real, we have seen economic realities that are pretty rough just in our lifetime.
Right. And one of the things that I know as a history buff and somebody who works in business is that history is fairly cyclical.
Yep.
And economics in our kind of environment happen about every 70 years. And it really crushes everybody. And then how we celebrate our way out is we have a big war.
I want to stop you. What you're saying is that there's a gigantic economic downturn every 70 years.
Yes.
Right.
And it seems that the only way to get out is with military spending.
Yeah.
That's how World War II and all of the infrastructure and the roads and the New Deal that FDR put in place.
And also the
Civil War. Well, got us out of a depression.
Yeah,
I mean, you can argue in many different ways.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, you talk about military spending. That's how Reagan spent us out of the
what would have been the
recession
one.
In the early 80s.
Yeah,
I'm not sure exactly that we've ever really made it back from the Great Recession.
It's,
I mean, things were looking good for a while, and then COVID came. I don't even know where we are anymore. I really don't.
You know, the Great Depression especially is especially interesting to me because it hit my family.
Yeah.
Honestly, the smartest human being that I've ever encountered in my entire life is my grandfather on my mother's side.
Sure.
A guy by the name of Frank L. Watson was his name. He was born in 1906. And I remember sitting down with him once and I had the questions of, you know, Grandpa Frank, tell me what the living in the Great Depression was like. And I used to see him every summer.
Yeah.
And I really wanted his take because this guy only had an eighth grade education. I have never met a more brilliant thinker ever in my life. And I remember him saying, Danny, what you need to do is I need you to read Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck.
Yeah.
Read that. And when you come back next summer, we're going to sit down and talk about it. And so I did exactly that. And I read the book and I saw the movie.
Mm-hmm. Henry Fonda, man.
Yeah. And I remember sitting down with him, and he told me his stories. He told me his stories. He was born in Canada. They lived in Minnesota. He told
you
me
you are Canadian.
Well, but he actually was born in Canada. Yeah, I mean, there's some you know, some of the Moyers also settled in Canada when they came over from Scotland. But he hitchhiked and hoboed his way to California, hopping aboard trains that went out there. Cool. He talked and told me stories about picking up cigarette butts on the side of the road and smoking them. And he talked about picking fruit in California for like 5-10 cents a day. Yeah. So there was a lot of
trailer
that kind of stuff.
For sailor rent.
But that's the reality in that. And at the same time, he earned enough money to send for his wife and his family and stuff like that.
I ain't got no keep going. I'm just
you know,
just accompanying you.
But that's the reality of what the Great Depression was for a lot of people. And if you really want to study that time period, in all seriousness, watch the movie. Moreover,
read
Steinbeck's original words. And then read Of Mice and Men. If you want some of the personality of the things of
just to get that little extra
if you're not bummed out already, Lenny, look across the river and think about
this. Just come on.
Look, I'm here. Look, you're gonna bum everybody out.
Let's,
I'm gonna do a little bit of levity.
Let's talk about Steel Town.
Okay. Steel Town is a song by a Scottish band, named Big Country. Everybody in this country knows them for the song In a Big Country. They had many hits outside of the United States. This was from their second album.
If it didn't happen in the United States, it didn't happen.
What?
If it didn't happen in the United States,
I don't
it didn't
follow
happen.
That kind of view. I try to keep a broad palette.
I know that.
Steel Town was their second album. And actually, Rich, in the UK, Steel Town entered the charts as an album at number one.
Oh, good for you.
All right. Well, good for them. I should have brought my lyric book on this
because you can't understand a word he's saying in this song.
The thing that I loved about Big Country is when Stuart Adams and their leader and them appeared on MTV in 1983-84 when they speak with such a heavy Scottish brogue that they actually put subtitles on the interview, and that as some that just makes me laugh. And I remember I remember hanging out in Glasgow with my dad, and we had to take a cabbie from one place to another, and the guy's just full on rattling, and I got about 75% of what he said, and I felt very proud because my dad got out of the car or out of the taxi. He's like, "I have no idea what he said," and I was conversing with the guy, and I'm like, "I only caught about 3 out of 4 words."
Yeah. Well, that's what happened in Scotland.
So this is a
what's
song.
What's the song
about? Well, it's about a man and his family that go to one of the steel towns where they're making, you know, producing steel and those kinds of durable goods and things like that. And then the mines or the factories just close up, all of the factories.
Right.
And they're in a position of where they've got worthless land, their houses are worthless, so they can't sell them.
Right.
And they are literally stuck there. And if you've ever been in parts of Scotland and northern England where you get stuck, you're not going anywhere.
Right.
And it's always been an economically tough area.
The thing I like about why you chose this song is that it really illustrates that this is not just an American problem. It doesn't just happen in Pennsylvania. It doesn't just happen in Ohio. It doesn't just happen in northern Minnesota. It happens everywhere in the world.
It's happening now in Scotland.
Yeah. Well, from, 1985?
1984's number one album, Steel Town. This is Big Country with their song, Steel Town.
Hey, you're stealing my thunder here. I'll do this on 95.1 KYMN.
Oh, man.
The one.
You stand with me.
1982, the Nylon Curtain album. That was Billy Joel with Allentown. Have I ever told you that that's absolutely one of my favorite Billy Joel songs?
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I realized that until very recently. I really love that song.
Oh, it's a great song. I remember the thing about the Nylon Curtain. I moved to Minnesota, a rural town in Minnesota, in June 6th, 1982. Okay. I came from a graduating class of 1,000 to a graduating class of 44.
Yeah, that's Footloose, culture shock.
Footloose is a documentary to me, and I'm not saying that without the slightest bit of irony.
Right.
Anyhow, I remember being in complete shock. Hearing the whole thing that Billy Joel was coming out with a new album was like a life raft to me.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, okay, waiting for it. And I got tickets to see him for the first time ever in November of 1982 at the Civic Center. And so the album, I think, came out around October of 82.
Yep.
I remember buying it, sitting down, and it's all of these songs about economic hard times and just depressing stuff. And I mean, the second song, Laura, had the F word.
He dropped an F bomb in 1982, which was not something that we were expecting.
No, I was not expecting that. This was not the album that I needed from Billy Joel at that time. At all.
Actually, it was. You just didn't know it at the time.
What happened was, is I listened to it the first two times, and I was like thoroughly depressed. I'm like, oh, crud. I was looking for Bill to give me like, hey, Dan, feel good. You know, he'd just come out with Glass Houses was his last album of new material.
Yeah.
So I went, okay, this is the thing. And I remember we were going to go to the concert, and I was excited for that. So I forced myself to listen to the Nylon Curtain. And I remember most of that concert because my entire family went, all four of us. And I was like 15. My brother was 10 at the time, 10 or 11. And all that I can think of is, I don't care what you play. I don't care what you play. As long as you don't play Laura. As long as you don't play Laura. Because the last thing I wanted my parents to hear was him do the F word. You know. And so, it was an amazing show. And the thing that I loved is the melody for Allentown. The very last song on that album is Where's the Orchestra? And there's a descending clarinet line as the song is fading out, and it's the melody for Allentown.
Yep.
In my mind, my favorite album by Billy Joel will always be 52nd Street. His masterpiece is the Nylon Curtain album.
I agree with you.
And this is how it starts, and it is, for all intents and purposes, a perfect, perfect record. One of the first piano recitals that I ever did when we moved to Minnesota is I played Allentown.
That was great.
A recital piece for me.
There's one bad song on
Be Careful.
Curtain.
Be Careful.
It is.
Which one?
There is. Room of Their Own.
I like Room of Their Own.
I know you do.
Because Liberty
you like
turns
everything.
The beat around. No, he turns the beat around, gets behind the beat, and then goes on top of it again. And it works.
Because Liberty has a hard time keeping time.
Well, he actually lost the beat.
Liberty DeVito, who was the longtime drummer for Billy Joel.
Yeah. But that's what I like about that is the Liberty mistake that they kept in.
Well, that's
he
great,
turned it
but
around.
It's not a good song. Anyway, moving on. Jump from 1982 to 1985. You know what happened in 1985?
Well, Live Aid.
Exactly.
Oh, and I got one right. That's very nice for me.
Bob Dylan closed the American side of Live Aid.
Right.
With a really poor acoustic set.
It was horrible.
Keith
and he
Richards
was joined
and Ron
with,
Wood.
Yeah.
And they couldn't hear themselves on the... But Dylan actually played... The songs that Dylan played, Dylan himself was on that night. But it just... You couldn't hear...
It sounded like a slug nest.
Well, anyway... One of the things Dylan said during that set was, I hope they can take maybe $1 or $2 million from what we've raised tonight and help the farmers who owe money to the banks. And this was in the middle or just this was it was in the middle of a farm crisis in the United States. And Willie Nelson heard Bob Dylan say that. Picked up the phone the next day, called John Mellencamp and said, well, you think he was serious about that? And those two guys called Neil Young, and they formed Farm Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And Farm Aid happened in September of 1985. Farm Aid is the forgotten little brother of Live Aid. But one day, my friend, we are going to do a Farm Aid show.
We should.
I really, 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 I still have somewhere, a 3-hour sort of highlight.
Sure. I'm going to tie this back a little ways. And you've got a 3-hour highlight of the original Farm Aid.
Yes, I do.
Okay. I'm going to tie this back. Billy Joel did not play Live Aid. He played Farm Aid.
He did indeed.
And it was also the first time that Eddie Van Halen and Sammy Hagar, yes. Eddie Van Halen joined Sammy Hagar's band, and it was the first time that Hagar played, and everybody went,
it was also the first time I heard Lone Justice, but that's another conversation altogether. Actually, it's not, but it's the first time I saw them play live. Anyway, but the reason that Willie called John Mellencamp was because John Mellencamp had just put out an album called Scarecrow, which was it's probably the definitive Midwest rock album of all time.
Hands down.
Doesn't get better than that. And the very first song on Scarecrow was called Rain on the Scarecrow, and it's about dealing with the farm crisis.
But that
and
wasn't the
your
first
farm.
Single.
No. Lonely the first single, Night Lonely All Night, which is, God, I love Lonely All Night. And there's a three song stretch in that album. It goes from Small Town to Minutes to Memories to Lonely All Night, and it's
compact
like
and perfect.
18 of the best minutes you will ever hear committed to whatever to record.
The great thing about this is I did not have to pick Rain on the Scarecrow because knowing you as I do, I knew you were going to pick it.
I told you I was picking it.
I know.
When I told you we were doing this show, one of the first things
I
said
you said,
was,
I've already got it programmed on my end. And sure enough, you sent me your list before I sent you yours, which is weird.
From 1985, this is John Mellencamp with the title track, sort of, from his album Scarecrow. This is Rain on the Scarecrow. 95.1 KYM.
So proud, son, I'm sorry.
Well, that was Gary U.S. Bonds with Out of Work. And Danny would like to talk to you about that song, but I don't know where the hell Danny went. He just got up and he... It's so annoying. Where are you?
Well, we were at, you know, the interim break, and so... You know, you said I could take a moment, so I went out to the bathroom, and I got locked out of the studio. I'm out here in the hall, and I can
all right, hear you.
Okay. Is it Pants on the Ground? Is that what you play whenever I call? Seriously, dude?
Pants on the Ground. It's your ringtone. Can you think of a more appropriate ringtone for you than Pants? Anyway, I'm coming to get you. I'll be right there. Hang on. All right. Jeez. We're back.
How many times do I tell you, you turn the little thing inside the knob, you turn it, and it pops out, and then it's unlocked. I told you this has happened a number of times. I admit it. Okay, are you happy? I admit this has happened a number of times.
The last time
you said that you were just going to go and do the rest of the show without me and leave me in the hall, and you know, I felt bad, so I thought I'd call and kind of. I'm really sorry, Rich. I'd like to say it won't happen again, but it'll probably happen next week.
Well, for God's sake, I'm not going to fire you in the middle of this damn show. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's really good. You fire me. I become an unemployed.
And he walked down the hall going, I'm out of work.
Okay. Yeah, so that was, you played Gary U.S. Bonds.
So did you.
Out of Work. I love that song. I love that song. And
that's a great song.
Yeah, it was written by Bruce Springsteen.
I know. Can I just real quick tell you my experience? I had not heard that song before, right?
And seriously?
I know. And I'm listening to it going, God, this sounds like a Springsteen song. He must have like been grooving on Springsteen when he did this, and then it gets to the sax solo. Like, oh, that's Clarence. This is totally a Springsteen song.
Yeah.
And then I looked it up, and it was written and produced.
Oh yeah,
by Bruce Springsteen.
Gary U.S. Bonds. I think this may have been his last top 40 hit in summer of '82.
By the way, yesterday, October 27th,
mm-hmm.
Gary W. Talent's 73rd birthday.
Wow.
Gary Talent, of course, the bass player of the E Street Band.
Fantastic. So yeah, Out of Work. That's just. You know, the song, the lyrics are incredibly depressing, but that is such a
That's
fun,
the happiest
lively,
unemployment the, song I've ever heard, man.
You know, and maybe we talked about, like, the Great Resignation. Yeah. There may be a lot of people who goes, hey, I'm out of work. You know, it could also, you know, I like that. Gary U.S. Bonds, major talent.
Yeah.
And Springsteen, of course, knew exactly how to write for that kind of voice and with that groove and, you know. You had said you could imagine little Steven making that face.
Like making those goofy faces.
You could see that.
Yeah, exactly.
You could see that.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I mean, these songs are really heavy. And so having something that's a little bit, you know, more joyful musically, even though lyrically depressing, that was...
There it is. So... There we go. That we go from something with a great sense of humor to the maybe with the most serious band in history.
Yes, and this was also my pick.
These guys picked up where you two left off.
Yeah, they did. We're talking about the band Midnight Oil from Australia.
My goodness.
And they're led by
Peter Garrett.
Yeah,
the 6'9" bald guy.
I mean,
I saw Midnight Oil.
Did you really?
At the Orpheum with an Australian.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. She wanted to go. She was studying at Olaf, and she was a year ahead of me, and we were friends. And she was feeling super homesick, and she knew that Midnight Oil was playing, so she wanted to go. And so she asked me to go with her. It was super fun.
That was massive. That band massively important in Australia.
Oh,
and
hugely.
Peter Garrett went on to serve some role in the government.
He
got elected for something, and I can't quite remember.
Yeah, and he helped. I don't know. They didn't rewrite the Constitution in Australia, but there was some major
additions.
There was some major constitutional convention in Australia that Peter Garrett was very much involved in. But it seems to me, and I might be completely wrong about this. It seems to me, though, that I've read somewhere in the last 5 years or so that Garrett like has done like a complete 180-degree
political shift. Oh, wow.
Like gone from super progressive dude to like not.
Really?
Yeah.
I picked this song. We're going to play a song called Blue Sky Mine. And from my point of view, I picked music that came from Scotland, music that came from Australia, music that came from the UK, England specifically. And
because you hate America.
It's not that I hate America. You, I just think that
you
I think
hate
that
America.
I'm into you globalism.
Are, you are so Canadian that you hate America.
I'm so Canadian. No, I'm really not. I love my homeland.
You're
just a critic of my homeland.
Well, so am I, but right. That doesn't mean I'm going to abandon the music.
Well, I didn't abandon the music, but I pick.
You did this week.
I look from a world point of view. No, I pick Brother Can I Spare a Dime, man.
From 1988? No, 1990, maybe.
You went and saw them. You tell me.
Blue Sky Mine.
It's your thing, man.
This is the follow-up to... The Beds Are Burning album.
But the thing that I like about this song is it's the reliance on the company, and then the company fails him. That's the important message for me.
This is Midnight Oil with Blue Sky Mine, 95.1 KYMN.
Thank you. the blue sky town. This is my town. Out in the Rust Belt fields, we were banging out Buicks, Oldsmobiles. There was always a job, and the money was there. Some say we got a little lazy, nobody seemed to care. But they figured it out. Sent the elbow breeze down to Mexico and off to the Chinese. And I learned a little something about how things are. No one remembers your name just for working hard. Drove into the ground till your factory's cold, and they tear it all down, and the parts get sold. Come the bankers now, picking over the bones. I got three more neighbors now, about to lose their homes. As they figured it out, they sent the elbow grease down to Mexico and off to the Chinese. And I learned a little something about how things are. No one gets a bonus for bloody knuckles and scars. One remembers your name just for working hard. There's a casino. Up around Boone, think I'll buy me a bottle and a motel room. Put all I have left on a little black square. Risk it all like the big boys, like I don't even care. I drive you into the crowd. Your engine's cold, calling the auctioneer as the banks foreclose. And I learned a little something about how things are. No one gets a bonus for bloody knuckles and scars. And no one remembers your name just for working hard.
That was a guy named Slade Cleaves with a song called Rust Belt Fields.
Rich, you got to tell me about this guy, because you sent this to me and I was like, who is this? And so I went and listened to it and I went, this is a great, great song. I mean, there's not one thing about it that I don't like. It's got... It's got a really great sounding vocal. The melody is great. The guitar lines and the guitar part is fantastic. And it's got this real movement and kind of imagery to it. So hit me to what you know. You didn't tell me anything about this guy.
I actually know very little about Slade Cleaves. This is the only song of his that I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even really know if Slade's like a... if he's a country guy or if he's a contemporary folk guy or a rock. I don't even know. This is the only song of his that I know. And this song hits me upside the head with a 2x4 every time I listen to it. When we decided that this was the show we were going to do, that was the first song I went to.
Really?
Was Russ Belfield's. I was, after having been fired yet again from a job that I had at that point had labeled my dream job. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm still kind of bitter about that one, but, I took a job as a bartender. Mm-hmm. I went back to what I know, right? Went back to bartending and was bartending at Imminent Brewing one night. And we were closing up, and I was mopping the floor, which is something that you have to do when you're,
right,
when you're a bartender, mopping the floor. And
then also cleaning the glasses. I mean,
well, mopping the floor. Mopping the floor, and we had the radio on. It was some Sirius XM thing, and this song came on, and I heard that refrain the first time, "No one remembers your name just for working hard," and I dropped the mop and ran for my phone and did the Shazam thing just so could figure out who this was, and it just struck, like, there I was, like, breaking my back, pouring beer and mopping a floor, and you know,
it's a truism.
No one remembers your name just for working hard.
Time now for the weekly list Haiku Corner, brought to you by Imminent Brewing, a truly poetic brewery. Here is your host, Haiku Rich.
I kind of ran out of time this week, and we literally just had to take a break in recording the show so I could go bang out some
haikus. Didn't get locked out this time, though.
You sat right where I told you to sit. Yeah. You stayed there, and it was good.
I know.
It was good.
I'm looking for my treat, though.
Yeah, well, your treat is six haikus.
Six, okay.
I just banged these things out, so we'll see how this goes. I don't know. We'll see. I haven't even really read these. I just wrote them and hot off the press. Bust your ass for them. They make unwise investments, and you pay the price.
Political.
That doesn't sound bitter, does it?
No.
Yes, I looked for work. No, did not turn down a job. Unemployment sucks. You've never collected unemployment, so
no.
Like when you collect unemployment,
you have to go through every week.
Before they send you your money, you have to go through, like, did you look for work this week?
Oh, man.
Yes. Did you turn down a job? No. Okay.
You want to talk about demeaning. I mean, really, when you get down to it.
There's so much about unemployment that is
UK, you're on the dole. I'm just trying to keep this global.
All right. Gary U.S. Bonds is way too happy about not having a job.
Well, okay.
Okay. This one is a true story.
Okay.
A true story and a tragedy in one haiku. I swear to God, this
You're
is a true story.
You're doing this in the 575? Okay, go for it.
Mr. Fauché named his tower after himself, and then he jumped off. Do you know that story?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he lost all of his money in the stock market crash and jumped off his own tower.
Well,
as Mr. Fauché did.
You want to talk about irony.
Yeah, well, there it is. It's a relief, though, sometimes when you lose a job, but you keep your soul.
Oh, now that's true.
That is true. 100%
true. That's true.
They don't deserve you, mister. There ain't no shame in being one man's trash.
Ooh, and hey, that's a reference to a song that you wrote, like, eons ago. I'm just saying. That was one of my favorite songs.
My, what a delight. This has been Haiku Corner. Thank you, Imminent.
Yeah, I wrote that song One Man's Trash in 2001. It's like the last good song I wrote.
And it's 20 years old.
It's 20-some years old, yeah. Exactly. You know, I have to say this. I think there have probably been moments in the show so far where I've sounded pretty bitter about...
No! No, what? You got to be kidding me. You bitter about employment issues?
Can I just tell you that I love both of my jobs that I have right now?
Oh, yeah. You work at KYMN,
yeah,
for one, and you also work at Eminent Brewery.
I have great employers,
yes,
across the board right
Makes
now.
Makes all the difference.
I love working for the people for whom I work.
Yes.
I'm very happy. So we want to thank Lauren Derek Myers for being the wonderful people that they are, sponsoring the Weekly List and making the Weekly List possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having some technical difficulties with my fancy new computer, and so
okay.
I don't have a script for an Eminent commercial.
Oh, this is going to be fun, kids. So, I mean, when you had a script, it was not like I was helpful in following it. And
true.
Now you're looking around for a piece of paper that doesn't exist.
Phone so I can look up. Here's what we need to know.
There's beer, right?
Yes, and... Last week we talked a little bit about the rules for humans that have been posted on the walls. Like, there's rules for dogs and there's rules for humans,
right?
This all sort of comes from a conversation that has been ongoing at Eminent over the summer for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The craft brewing industry over the last, I don't know how long, there's been a real problem across the country in the craft brewing industry with sexual harassment.
Yeah, I could see that.
Okay, you know, and because there are more and more women in the craft mm-hmm. brewing industry, as there well should be, because, you know, women like beer too, and the women are, you know.
So, yeah.
So, but, you know, there are guys who just can't seem to understand that how to behave and how to change, you know, that they've got, some of these people are troglodytes. And,
yeah.
and don't get it, right? Anyway, so it's been a thing. And it was brought to our attention that this was a thing last spring. And so there was over the summer, there was a series of meetings at Eminent Brewing with staff. And we talked about, there was never an issue at Eminent, but we just sat and we talked about this thing.
And the thing about it, it's very important that there's an awareness and that there's a discussion, because a lot of harassment really may not seem like it to the person who's perpetrating it. And it's just in simple words and things that they use and phrases. And it's important to be aware
right,
of that.
Right. Sometimes it is just simple education.
Yes.
That's all.
And that's where the conversations come from.
And the education is, hey, understand the perspective of the person that you're talking to.
Right.
Right.
Do you understand that that person might feel uncomfortable when you say words like whatever?
Well, you know,
well, not the word whatever, but
like,
you know.
Well, I mean, I'll even go, you know, we have asked now that our customers don't address some of our bartenders as sweetie or honey or darling or, you know. Or
I can still call you Tootsie though, right?
Or
is that just between you and
him? I won't. Well, not in front of the kids, dear.
Okay.
Or, you know, like, you know, or, oh my gosh, a beautiful woman handing me a beautiful beer. That's just.
Yeah, that's true.
Just, you know what? Back off of that stuff. Yeah. Just, you don't. It's not necessary. And you have to understand that it might actually make that person uncomfortable.
Thanks for the suds. That's it.
Yeah. You know, or, you know, how much do I owe you? That would
be
fine.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And here's a dollar in your jar. Right.
There you go. That's even better. I like that.
That's very good. So this week, sort of also October is Domestic Violence mm-hmm. Awareness Prevention Month. Mm-hmm. Eminent Brewing is introducing a beer called Brave Noise Pale Ale.
Okay.
And this is a collaboration with a number of other breweries across the country. This is put together by a company called WeVow, which is sort of a consulting firm that helps companies understand, breweries especially, understand the ins and outs of sexual harassment and how to avoid these things and what to do if you have an issue and all this stuff. This week, sort of to promote awareness of this, we have this beer.
Good.
Brave Noise Pale Ale, Brave Noise for the people who stand up and right. say, you can't do that. You can't right. say that. It's not right.
Yeah.
And, you know, just one more reason that I'm proud to work at Raymond & Brewing.
Yeah. And we're not going to belabor the whole thing. Again, follow all of the COVID protocols. Wear a mask for sure if you haven't been vaccinated. And if you have been vaccinated, wear a mask anyhow, because what the heck.
Yeah.
By the way, I got my booster shot.
Did you?
On Monday, yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so I was really, and no reaction at all.
That's great.
So, which is really especially
That's
good.
That's
so.
Great. Cool. Can't even tell you
he doesn't have his phone. Trust me when I say that there's a more variety of beer fresh that have been brewed and on tap than you can possibly imagine. Whatever you're doing right now, make a plan to be at Imminent this weekend.
You want to be there Friday night because Phil Hay on drums, Kevin Clement on bass, Dave Hagedorn on vibes. They call themselves Cave, and it's great jazz.
Cool.
Great
so
jazz.
You got
Friday
that.
Night, 7 o'clock.
And I'm assuming that there's going to be food trucks
there.
There
will be food trucks. Okay. Absolutely. What those food trucks are,
we're not sure.
Couldn't tell you.
But I'll tell you what. Go to the Facebook page for Imminent Brewing. You're going to find all the information while you're there. Sign up and follow. Follow Imminent. Like it. That's going to be where you're going to get the most up-to-date news. So go and take a look. Check it out. You can be the first one to know about what's going on in Northfield's living room.
Or you can visit their website at imminentbrewing.org.
Beautiful.
All right, so what's next?
You know, it could have gone so much better or so much further south on that one.
It really,
really
could
I
have,
mean,
actually. We just riffed that.
That was, you know.
That wasn't bad.
We almost.
We're so self-congratulatory on the show.
Okay. So next.
James McMurtry. Do you know who James McMurtry's father was?
No.
Larry McMurtry.
That name's ringing a bell.
He wrote.
That's really ringing a bell.
Is it Wings of the Dove? No, it was Wings of the Dove. Larry McMurtry wrote a big Western novel.
Okay. That's it. He's like, okay, now yeah. I know. Western novelist, got it. All right, go. Yeah.
Anyway, James is his son. James is a songwriter. James has never been a household name. But he is a songwriter.
Well, the thing about this song, I listened to it. My first pass through when I listen to any music is I listen to the whole thing and I listen to the music elements.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to have amazing lyrics if it's got a really good whatever music piece that grabs me. And the first time I listened to this, I went, okay, it's interesting. But really, there's not much of a melody to speak of. There's not an interesting guitar part or music parts. It's not fascinating. But this is still a great song, and it's driven largely by the lyrics. And some of them are so evocative, and the language that he uses is so perfect. And one of the things that I've noticed a lot over the past couple years is I work in the Twin Cities a lot, and I spend time in Edina and Bloomington, and I'm getting off on my exit to go to work
yep.
every morning off of 494. And there's one where I take a left, and there's a guy that's always standing there, and it's always a different guy with the sign of lone or desperate, anything helps, pray for me, all that kind of stuff. And that's not something that I have seen until just the past few years in some of these areas in the Twin Cities.
Right.
I don't expect to see that around Eden Prairie where I live, but no. I do.
Yep.
I see it every day. And I worry about these people because it's getting colder. And he mentions people like that, the Vietnam vet holding his cardboard sign,
yep.
and the reality of the lyrics on this piece is overwhelming. And it's the lyrics that really drive this song for me.
Which is why I would be more apt to have selected this song than you. Because
oh,
that's
yeah.
where I go first.
I mean,
anyway.
Lyrics, you're always a lyric first, and I'm a music first kind of guy.
James McMurtry with a song called We Can't Make It Here on 95.1 KYMN.
There's a Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line. A flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze. One leg missing and both hands free. No one
The VA budget's just stretched so thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. That big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills. But they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot. Cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack. Just busted concrete and rusted tracks. Empty storefronts around the square. There's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore. The bar's still open, but man, it's slow. The tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd gets thinner each day. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore. In the magazine she found on the floor of the laundromat. A woman with kids can forget all that. If she comes up pregnant, what'll she do? Forget the career, forget about school. Can she live on faith, live on hope? High on Jesus or hooked on dope? When it's way too late to just say no. You can't make it here anymore. Like the ones we made before, except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin, or the shape of their eyes, or the shape I'm in? Should I hate them for having our jobs today? No, I hate the men sent the jobs away. I can see them all now, they haunt my dreams. All lily white and squeaky clean. They've never known want, they've never known need. The shit don't stink and the kids won't bleed. The kids won't bleed in the damn little war. And we can't make it here anymore. Thank you. what we got. And if the president wants to admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo, look us in the eye, call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, or Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains. It's done closed down along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. Dust devils dance in the noonday heat. There's rats in the alley and trash in the street. Gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here anymore.
From the album Stars of CCTV, that is UK's own Hard-Fi with their song Cash Machine. this is a band that I really, really like. I was in Scotland in 2003, and I heard a song called Hard to Beat on BBC One, and I flipped out. And so then I picked up the album, Stars on CCTV, and then Cash Machine was the second single.
I have to ask you a question.
What?
Do you flip out?
You know,
out?
We listen with our...
You're in the UK on a regular basis. Like, you're
well,
not there...
Well, not regular. Not, well, I mean, I'm not like a you've been jet there, like, set.
It's been 30 years since you and I were there together. You've been there 4 or 5 times since then.
Yeah, it seems like about every 8 years.
Okay. All right.
And COVID is... I was actually going to go in 2021.
Were.
I was going to go because it was the 8th year.
Well, and you need... Frankly, I still think you really need to get back over there, but that's a whole different conversation.
I need to what?
You really need to get back over there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Different. I mean, okay. There's places in the Highlands I could disappear.
So here's my... well, don't do that.
No, but you know...
But here's my question. Every time you hear a song that you like when you're in the UK, do you flip out?
No, not always. Not always, in all seriousness.
I think you flip out a lot.
Well,
Because you're in the UK. I think, ooh, this is a UK song that no one else knows in America. I can't wait to bring this home and spread the gospel.
There's something about music on that side of the pond that I really, really
it's
like.
It's not a pond. I hate that. I hate that phrase.
I like
it. It's an ocean. Look, it's the Atlantic Ocean. It's not a pond.
Look,
ask the Titanic. So,
sometimes you got to leave the colonies and go back home, you know? That's all I'm going to say. I said that intentionally to tick you off, and it looks like it worked. I amuse myself sometimes.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, Hardfi. I like that song. I mean, it talks about some of the things that the UK youth... going through some economic times,
right.
And
yeah.
You know, that's the lad culture gone wrong. So, all right. Okay, and you have no opinions on that, I'm sure. All right, then. Moving on. obviously, Rich did not pick that song, and this next song I did pick, and it's also from an Englishman.
I was very pleased, though, that you picked this.
This, okay, Billy Bragg is one of my favorites, and I have liked him... pretty much forever. His fourth album came out in 1988, and it was from an album called Workers' Playtime. And the lead single was a song called Waiting for the Great Leap Forwards. And Billy Bragg is incredibly political. And he I mean, he's a socialist.
There isn't a non-political bone in Billy Bragg's
body.
No,
there's really not. And I love him for that.
Me too.
Pre-pandemic, one of the last shows I saw that the summer before... was Billy Bragg at the Fine Line.
Sure.
And he told a hilarious story about a duck.
How can you understand a word he's saying, though?
Oh, he's easy. It's just simple Cockney. That's easy. Go to Glaswegian. Now, that's a truck.
That's
a bunch of...
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. But this is probably my favorite Billy Bragg song, and I love how it works musically, because it starts out so simply, and every pass through the melody lines of all of that... more and more gets added until you get to this cacophony of sound at the end that's going so great. He even has a shout out to a Star Trek character in
yes.
it. I mean, that's literally throwing everything. It also has one of my all-time favorite lyrics is, if no one seems to understand, start your own resolution, or start, I'm going to completely redo that.
If no one seems to understand, start your own revolution. That was good.
Okay. If no one seems to understand, start your own revolution and cut out the middleman. I love that line. Just love it. So there you go.
I used to have a job as a middleman.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah,
actually, more than once I had a job as a middleman.
Just go direct to the source. Direct to the source. No offense.
No,
anyhow, from 1988's Workers Playtime, this is Billy Bragg with Waiting for the Great Leap Forwards here on KYMN Radio. The Leap.
It may have been Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline, but on the Che Guevara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over the luxury's disappointment, so he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her. But he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner.
Soviet Union. A scientist is blinded by the resumption of nuclear testing, and he is reminded that Dr. Robert Oppenheimer's optimism fell at the first hurdle. In the cheese pavilion, and the only noise I hear is the sound of someone stacking chairs and mopping up spilled beer, and someone asking questions and basking in the light of the 15 fame-filled minutes of a fanzine writer. Mixing pop and politics, he asks me what the use is. I offer him embarrassment and my usual excuses, while looking down the corridor out to where the van is waiting. I'm looking for the Great Leap Forward. Jumbo sales are organised, pamphlets have been posted. Even after closing time, there's still parties to be hosted. You can be active with the activists or sleeping with the sleepers while you're waiting for the Great Leap Forward. Oh, one leap forward, two leaps back. Will politics get me the sack? Waiting for the Great Leap Forward. And cut out the middleman. Right, lean forward. A perfect world, we're all singing tune, but this is reality. Skip some room. Right, lean forward. So join the struggle while you make the revolution. It's just a t-shirt.
Watch it, the right thing forward. Watch it, the right thing forward.
Okay, so before we do anything else, I have to say that James McMurtry's father, Larry McMurtry, wrote a book called Lonesome Dove. That's what I... And I'm just talking right now because Danny's doing drugs right here in the studio as we speak, because that's just... Hey. It's rock and roll, man.
Hey, man, it's called insulin. Okay. I didn't know that we were going live right away. This has been a day off. You know, I've been just off all day.
It's been a weird week, let me tell you.
It has been.
It's been a rough week. That was Sting with We Work the Black Seam off of his 1985 solo debut, The Dream of the Blue Turtles. Now, I picked that song for very much the same reason you picked just about every song that you picked.
Because you like it?
Well, there's that. Yes.
Because it's from the UK.
I wanted to demonstrate that the economic hardship and losing your job and all this isn't just an American problem. You took that ball and ran with it like you're Barry frickin' Sanders. But I just wanted to make the point. You just wanted to make a whole show about it.
Well, you know, I was watching The Commitments last week, you know, because...
I'm black and I'm prude.
Well, you know, because the whole thing about... we did Try a Little Tenderness, and The Commitments do a tremendous version of that, but they do the Otis version.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, I was thinking about Otis Redding, and it got me into The Commitments, watching that, and it was,
you're the only person I know who listens to Otis Redding and immediately goes to the UK.
Well, because it reminded me of The Commitments version, and I love that movie. And they're sitting there on the dole, the whole thing, because they're musicians. It's better to be a musician on the dole than just a unemployed pipe fitter.
Folks, that's going to just about do it for this here edition of The Weekly List. If you like the show, there's a whole lot of different ways you can listen to this show. You can stream us from our program page at kymnradio.net. You can podcast us from the KYMN Radio podcast, and I have some news coming on the Weekly List podcast.
Do you really?
We can't announce today, but stay tuned. There's some very exciting podcast news about the Weekly List on the horizon.
Okay.
And I'm
just here for the ride,
yeah.
You know.
And or
you used to give me free beer from Imminent, and that's kind of dried up.
Or you can just plain old listen to us on 95.1 KYMN every Thursday night at 7 p.m., provided there's not some sort of sporting event, in which case we get shoved over to like 9.
But you can always stream us.
We will always be on by, you know, we'll always be ready to stream by 7 o'clock. We'll always be podcastable by 7 o'clock Central Time. You know, so anyway, so you can also go find us on Facebook, where I post every new show every Friday morning. And as long as you're on Facebook, go like the KYMN Facebook page, 95.1 The One, and go like the Imminent Brewing Facebook page.
Good.
We have an expanded social media presence these days.
You know, we actually started Instagram on this
past
week, which was kind of fun. You know,
the underscore weekly underscore list.
Yeah, look it up.
That's Instagram, or we're on Twitter at the Weekly List.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there any underscoring on that, or is it
just at the Weekly List, all one word,
the
all lowercase, all one word at the Weekly List.
Okay. At the Weekly List.
All right.
You know, the thing that I was wondering about this show, now that we're at this point where we've played 11 songs, and we have not played anything by Bruce Springsteen.
Actually,
and
we have. The very happy unemployment song.
Right, yeah, Gary U.S. Bonds.
Right.
It was written by Springsteen. But
we have not heard Bruce.
No, we have not heard Mr. Yeah. Springsteen.
Did you really think we'd do a show like this?
No, not at all.
Without going to Bruce?
No.
Yeah. The only...
And you nabbed him before me, so...
Well, yeah, and then I changed my song. Because I originally told you I was going to use The River.
That's right, you did.
Yeah.
That's
but
a good song.
I decided this was a more appropriate song, although The River would have worked just fine. No, I mean, the problem with this show is which Bruce Springsteen song do you get?
That
pick?
Is the problem. Which album do you go
with? He is, we've got, I'm not even going to make a secret about this. We've got a Bruce Springsteen show coming up here in a couple of weeks where we're going to be joined by the legendary Northfield musician Ray Coudray.
I'm really looking forward to that show. I'm interested to hear what he's going to
pick. But what Ray and I were talking about Springsteen just the other day, and what Ray told me is that, you know, I mean, he is the working man's poet, right? And that's what he is the voice of the working man. You have to have a Bruce Springsteen song on the show.
So you picked not just the song Youngstown, which is originally on
Ghost of Tom Joad.
Ghost of Tom Joad album. But you picked the live version with the E Street Band from Live in New York City.
Yes.
So explain that. Explain yourself. There.
One line.
Okay.
One, smokestacks reaching like the arms of God into a beautiful sky of soot and clay. The way he sings it in this version, it's poetry either way, man. But
it destroys.
Smokestacks reaching like the arms of God. It's just, wow. That just that sums up your character. And
oh yeah, and Springsteen is incredibly important to me. I know he is to you. And he's one of those guys. He'll make a great point and say that he gets labeled as the working man's hero, as having never had a job.
I love that line in Springsteen on Broadway. Until now, I have never had a 9-to-5 job.
Right.
I do not like it.
Yeah. And he was very, in his autobiography, which is an outstanding read. Yeah. I was saddened as I started getting close to the end because it was going to be done, which means I get to read it again.
Yeah.
But he talks very much that the first employment and really the only unemployment he got was so that he could earn enough money to buy a guitar.
Yeah.
That was it, to buy his first real guitar.
You know, it's funny. Wasn't he the manager of a 7-Eleven, and that's why they call him the boss?
It goes back to when before he had been. It was the Bruce Springsteen band,
yeah.
And he got sick and tired of bailing one band member out of jail for having pot on their front seat of their car. The car gets stolen, and then they report the car stolen, and then they go to jail. He got sick and tired of having all of these people in his bands doing that, and he went, somebody needed to be a benevolent dictator. And that was his exact words. So it was, okay, it's going to be Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. We're all a band together, but it's my name. I can hire and fire. And that's what he wound up doing in 1988 after the Tunnel of Love tour.
He was
the boss. He was always referred to as the boss.
Yeah.
And no, he would never have been in 7-Eleven's employee long enough to become a manager because, like I said, he painted fences and painted, houses and stuff. Once he got enough money to buy his first guitar, he quit the working life until Broadway.
Well, here he is, the rich man in a poor man's shirt. This is Bruce Springsteen from 1999.
Yeah, because this was that reunion.
Yeah, this was this was Bruce Springsteen, the Easter Band, live from Madison Square Garden in 1999. Yeah. This is Youngstown.
Hey, we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we will talk to you guys again next week.
Hair in Youngstown, hair in Youngstown. from World War II. Now the yard's just scrap and rubble. He said those big boys did what Hitler couldn't do. These mills that built the tanks and bombs that won this country's wars. He gave our sons a career in Vietnam. Now we're wondering what they were dying for. Here in Youngstown, here in Youngstown, there my sweet jam, so here now, here darn it, the Iron Range, the coal mines of Appalachia, the story's always the same. 700 tons of metal a day, so you tell me the world's changed. Once I made you rich enough to forget my name. In Youngstown, in Youngstown, I sweet jams again. Two heavens work with. I pray the devil comes and takes me to stand in the fiery furnaces of hell.